This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. Civil disobedience has always been part of Port Townsend's DNA, but has gained frequency and power in reaction to new government programs. On this week's Compass, local activists Doug Milholland and Julia Cochran talk to Compass correspondent Charlie Bermant about the importance of staying involved and active on social issues, as if our lives depend on it, which it often does. So now let's go inside the Compass.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Compass. I'm Charlie Bermant, and I'm here with Doug Milholland and Julia Cochran. Okay, so we're going to talk about activism. I would like to just kind of start with each of you and say, like, so, you know, what was your life like in terms of what did you do before you retired, if I can use that word? What has kept you really motivated and committed to being an activist? And let's do this alphabetically, Julia.
Well, I've had a variety of different careers in my life, including I'm a vet. I was an architect in New York City, and I walked out of that life, and I moved here where there's no skyscrapers, and eventually became a paraeducator with Port Townsend School District for 20 years. So that is that world. The other world, the world of activism, I believe started when I was a toddler. When I was 4 or 5 years old, I was a mascot to a shoeshine gang at 90th and Broadway in Manhattan. And it started because I realized when I put out my little white hand that I got more money than they did. And so I did that. That was like my hobby off and on for till I was 11 years old. I just started with a practice in compassion. I was raised a Catholic, and I focused in on that part of that the religion and kept there. Stayed there.
And so that's been some really interesting times, and we've all lived through interesting times in terms of the 60s protests and so on. A lot of people, I would guess, use myself as an example, where we were pretty committed and into it in the 60s, but we kind of grew out of it or moved away from it for some reason when we started our lives. And maybe tell me, what kept you moving? What kept you connected and committed?
Well, I think focusing on helping human beings, on focusing on charity and those things, gives you little dopamine rushes, which is something that all educators know, that if you can get that unhappy kid to give away half his sandwich, he'll get a little boop of happiness. And I think as a child, I taught myself that, and it's kept me focused and committed. I think that, you know, we all have different motivations, and I think that no matter what I was tied into, whether I was tied into the peace movement or the women's movement or whatever, I always was aware of the human suffering that actually was behind that movement. I feel the same way about climate change.
Okay, so Doug, same question. What did you do in your earlier life, and what keeps you motivated and committed in your later life? I guess we can call it that.
Charlie, I think that the first real activism that I can remember was when I decided to dig a fallout shelter. I was probably 8 years old, something like that, and we lived in a small cow town out in the Oregon desert. My dad and mom were educators, and I decided, oh my gosh, I have to protect my family. So I started digging in the wintertime. I got down about a foot and a half, and I found water because we were living on an old lake bed, and I just thought, oh gosh, what are we going to do now? And my dad didn't come out and build concrete for him, so I had to give up on that. But since I came into independent ways of thinking, courtesy of my family's desire not to fill me with how I had to think, I really appreciate that. It's a shout out to Mom and Dad. And I, like everybody else, found myself facing the Vietnam paradigm. What is it that we're supposed to do as sentient beings? To say yes, sir, or to say no, sir, is always a good question. And I found myself saying no, sir, in large crowds. I did not go to Vietnam. And I found myself saying, yes, I can, when the question of shall the United States invade for the fifth time the country of Nicaragua to get rid of the socialism that was growing there underneath the Sandinistas. And I found that it was just very interesting to realize that there's a wind of the people that can fill events. And the Sister City Project was very popular in Port Townsend in the 80s. I chose to build houses for a livelihood. Some of you may be listening to this program in a house I helped build. I got to work with building a project called co-housing. That was very interesting. It's a nice way to share resources. I've been involved with dealing with the electromagnetic spectrum. How can we as a people wake up to the realization that our government's been captured by the corporatists, that our mechanisms for protecting ourselves that we depend upon government to properly handle has been disabled, and that we can't expect to be saved by our government. We must act. And I've been blessed to be in a community with lots of activists. I've got lots of role models that are living here. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of a team that says it's time to change course as a people if we're going to live on this garden planet.
Okay, this is Compass, WKPTZ FM. I'm Charlie Berman talking to Doug Milholland and Julia Cochran about activism. And so we just recently had an election in 2016 which shook things up, and a lot of the social things that occurred, social innovations that occurred over the subsequent years of the 60s, were kind of taken apart in a way, and a lot of the things that we thought we had, we really didn't. Julie, can you address that?
Oh.
Or do you agree with it, I guess?
Oh, I guess, yes, I definitely agree with it. And I think that the thing that our current administration is doing that reaches me the most is the cruelty to the people who are seeking asylum. The whole emergency on the southern border is someone's fantasy land. I've been there. I spent Christmas there. There's no emergency. The emergency is dumping hundreds and hundreds of people, that resources, at a small nonprofit in El Paso, Texas, called Annunciation House. That is an emergency, but that's created by our government. And that, there's just so many ways he's trying to harm. It's like everything in my life that I value, that's a social good, this man is determined to harm. You know, gay rights, women's rights, the right to I'm pro-choice, the right to choosing whether or not I'm going to have a child. I have a child by choice, who I love. But it's my right to choose whether or not I'm going to be a mom. And things like that. It's just like he's attacking every front there is. He's attacking Medicare and Medicaid for sure, which is my health insurance, and all of that world. So his value system is not mine, and I am not even part of his value system, actually. He would most probably wishes I would poof, go away.
If he's even aware of you. But so there's all these things that you both do in terms of protests, and especially with this government kind of rolling over things. How do you get heard? How do you get people to listen to you and act, Doug?
I think that that courtesy is a big piece of it for me. Mm-hmm. I think that when you do shout-outs and shout-downs and you fill the space with the angry violence of hatred, that we are just a pawn in somebody else's chess game, and I refuse that equation. I found that if we proceed with courtesy, even if it's a no sir to the military or no way, we can find traction. For example, I'm fussing around with trying to get our country to change directions in terms of strategic warfighting, nuclear gamesmanship. I would like us to move away from that. And I'm using the strategy of gathering signatures from the people to give some credence to the idea that this isn't my desire, but lots of people share that desire. I think that when we start focusing on what we share, we're going to find there's great movements, great potential for a change of course and improvement. Lots of room for improvement in our culture.
Okay, so you said that you approach your adversary, for lack of a better word, who's in politics and a thought. You approach them with courtesy, but it seems to me that the whole environment is extremely discourteous. Everybody is like, on my Facebook page, I can see a post and I can read it and know pretty much who it's from because, you know, either they're the far left or the far right and they're parroting, as in the bird, certain points of view. So I guess my question, and I'd like both of you to answer this, maybe start with Julia's. Do you think there's any way someone on the other side could listen long enough to change their opinion and turn that around? Are there any way someone on the other side could convince you to change yours?
It depends on the issue. The pro-choice issue, I don't believe the sides are ever going to come together. I don't really know what the resolution of that is. But most issues, I think that if people, you know, if people work with the poor and the homeless and stuff like that, they start getting a sense that the safety net is needed, is just, is right. You know, you start having sympathy for people, you start having empathy for people. And I think that, it, you know, as a country, if we focus on compassion and charity and being nice to each other, I mean, I just went to a memorial service of a local person named Paul Becker, and the number one attribute they gave him was kindness. That is amazing, and I do believe walking in the world in kindness helps.
Right, like Bill and Ted, be yeah. excellent to each other.
Well, and I'm also kind to Chapman and Theringer, you know, and I work on people's campaigns, and I do it with that attitude that this isn't just because I'm hedging my bets. This is because I actually like you as a human being and care for you.
Okay, so Doug, changing people's opinions, how does that work these days?
It's a challenge, Charlie. I think that people are drinking in a lot of very toxic thought concepts that are popular in and being produced by people who depend upon command control to effectively shape reality. And I think one of the best antidotes to that is to recreate with the living world of which we're but a part. The way I figure it, there's a fundamental sea change that can happen in a person when they move from the thought process that's, oh, what's in it for me? What do I get out of this? To the point of view that there's a cosmic wind of life that flows through all forms, and that when you realize that we're just a small part of this living planet, and that we're facing a very difficult moment in time and as things unravel, the question comes in, how can I help? And that's what I'm encouraging people to ask themselves. How can I help? And one way to help is to identify, okay, when I feel these ways, when I listen to these voices, am I filled with violence and fear? If you are, then you're being taken advantage of, because that's not the only strategy we have as human beings. We can also mm-hmm. fill ourselves with compassion and affiliation and acceptance and acknowledgments, the four A's that my marriage counselor taught me about.
So, right, if we all went to marriage counselors, we'd be happy. So let me continue, actually, with another topic. You, I believe in 2016, you ran for Congress?
Yeah, I've ran for Congress twice, Charlie. I thought that I wasn't going to win, and I was correct. I got 6% of the vote one year and 4% the next time I ran. I felt it was important to give myself permission to be heard. I carry thought processes that are that makes perfect sense if you come from my background of serve the people and how can we raise all boats at the same time. I think we'd be much further off if we took to the look to the Russians, for example, and said, hey, brothers, we've got to find another path away from this nightmare that we've created.
Sure. But I guess my question is, I mean, you were a really long shot. Because, I mean, I guess the first time you ran against Dix and the second time against Kilmer.
Right.
And they're both really popular guys for one reason or another. But let's say things change and you were in Congress. What would you do? How would you handle that job right now? I mean, it seems pretty overwhelming.
Well, I like the young Congress lady who has this really funny nickname, AOC.
Right.
It's very similar to AOK. And I think she is AOC. And AOK, that's right. My theory is that I would listen up. I'd say, hey, I could use some help here. Look at me. I'm an old white guy. I'm just the kind of guy that you would think is full of these toxic thoughts things, and I may have them. I have to listen up if I'm going to be part of the path, opening a path towards a future that includes as much as possible of the living earth that we're a part of now. My job is to be a team member in Congress, and I'd be looking to Bernie Sanders or AOC or Elizabeth Warren for clues. Listen to the Black Caucus for clues. How do we then move forward together? How do we set down the strident voices that are filling us with hate and fear and find a path towards a future that works for everyone?
Okay, but Julia, have you ever run for anything? Have you ever thought of running for anything?
I've run for city council a whole bunch of times.
Okay.
I ran for PCO and won. I was a housing authority commissioner, which isn't exactly running. It's an appointed position, but I was that for 9 years here, which is a public official. I've never run anything in the bigger sphere. No, that would terrify me. I'm not a public speaker. This is as public as I get.
Sure, but I mean, there's the argument that, you know, it's a lot of work to be in Congress. It's a lot of work, and I'm talking detail work, to be on city council and being an activist and being able to just say your piece.
I can take local better, but I think city council and the county commissioners and stuff, that the individuals rely on their allies and not allies to do the research, to do a lot of the legwork, and to give them the information. I show up at city council meetings or county commissioner meetings at least once a month and usually more often. And I also show up at the hospital commission. I show up here and there. Anything that's elected at some point sees me in front of them saying, you know, please think about this. And the warming center, you know, I do talk to city council members and county commissioner members about the warming center and about the issues around the homeless here. And I think I have an effect that way. I don't need to sit in their seats. I can be much more pointed as an independent advocate who says, these are my interests, this is why I know, and give them the information.
Well, I've been to a lot of meetings, and some of which that, you know, either both of you have spoken at. And what strikes me about that is you have 3 minutes or 2 minutes, and right around 2 minutes and 45 seconds, everybody's eyes start rolling. And then certainly, like, sometimes the commissioner or the city councilor will allow you to finish your sentence, and sometimes they don't. So, I mean, do people really listen to these comments, or are they just so stuck in the procedure of, you know, let's get this 3 minutes over with and let's go to the next one?
I believe that they listen. I mean, you know, I believe Kate Dean hears me when I talk at the county commissioners, to be exact. I know that Amy Howard and David Favor and Michelle Sandoval hear me when I speak to the city council. I hope the others do. You know, if you develop a relationship with people, then you're more apt to get heard. And I have that relationship with some people outside of those meetings, and I know that I do get heard because of it.
Okay, this is Charlie Berman at KPTZ, a special live edition of Compass. I'm here with Doug Milholland and Julia Cochran, both local activists. Excuse me. And my next question is has to do with people listening to you in Port Townsend. Now, I think you would be pretty hard pressed to find very many Trump supporters here, or let me reword that, public Trump supporters, because people are not willing to speak out in a counter way. So when there's a demonstration down in front of the co-op and so on, and all these the women in black and stuff, you're kind of preaching to the converted in a lot of ways. My feeling is, Scott, if you want to be heard more, you might go to Bremerton or you know, the sub base, which Doug, you have done, but maybe just address what's it like to be an activist in Port Townsend in a town where probably most of the people agree with you, and maybe start with Doug.
Well, you're spot on there, Charlie. It's if you go to Bremerton or to Oak Bay, like I have, looking at the being a vigil. Well, gee, Julie and I both went to a vigil over at Oak Bay at the Navy Alt Field, and it's important to recognize that people do have. You will always find somebody that says, "Don't think that I'm programmed. Don't think that I can't hear you. I really need to hear your truth. I need you to be bold, to be humble, and be forthright in speaking the truth." I find that in all sorts of locations. It's happened to me. And we need to hold each other's ability to be vehicles for change.
Julia, what about...
I think demonstrating locally, I think what we're doing is that we're creating a community, we're giving each other courage, we're acting in solidarity, and I think those are all good values. You know, maybe we're preaching to the choir, but it's okay. If there wasn't a choir, there wouldn't be music.
That's good. So kind of along those lines, I mean, you both spent a long time being activists. Can you point to an accomplishment, something, a cause that you supported that ended up, and you spoke out and end up in change of a law or something like that, or change in policy?
I could speak to that. In Port Townsend, a group of us discovered that the United States was busy shipping weapons, conventional weapons made with nuclear waste residues and waste from nuclear fuel plants as well. And those weapons were being shipped through our streets, past our schools, and then taken overseas to the Middle East killing grounds with ships that call in our harbor. So I found that it was a critically important issue to bring up, because we really don't, as a people, want to be victims of being the proponents of such awful war crimes. And there was some resonance with that with the city and the county government. The question was picked up by activists over at the Trident Nuclear Submarine Base, and Glenn Milner put it in front of the environmental impact statement process. He sued for the Navy, saying that we did not have a right to know locally what kind of dangers were faced. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of Milner's suit. And some additional information was gained before the Navy was able to change the laws to close that door on the right to know that the environmental impact statement process is. Subsequently, I was thanked by one of the base commanders at the weapons transfer depot over on Indian Island. He said he personally made sure that the anti-missile bullets that were made of depleted uranium were off the ship, and that he'd replaced that with tungsten. So I felt good about that.
Okay, Jim.
And I think that an impact that I've had locally recently is that I joined a chorus of voices saying we wanted gender parity in the homeless shelter, and it doubled the amount of beds available for women.
Okay, so winding up here, we only have about 3 minutes. So social networking. Both of you are on social networking. And as I sort of postulized before, is that a word, that people don't really change their minds. People see a comment for you and go, oh, the Doug, Julia, you know, we know what they're going to say.
I actually disagree. I have a friend that I lived with in Ohio many years ago who responded to a comment on Facebook that I put on. I didn't even realize we were Facebook friends, but she responded to a comment that about immigration that I put up, and I said, hey, hi, and I called her, and we now talk once a month. And I'm not saying that she is, she definitely isn't a Trump supporter, but she is a conservative person. And just having that monthly conversation is letting us hear each other, where we come from, in love, because we still do love each other. And you do change people's minds. And I think that the whole thing, anti-Facebook thing, is fear and breaking up a communication thing that is owned by the people. If you're worried about your privacy, don't put your stuff out there. But you put out there what you care about, the information that you care about, the events that you care about.
Okay, so Doug?
Well, social media is a big part of how I proceed. Facebook, I use it to let people know about articles that I think are important. It's definitely a changed field out there than it was 20 years ago when we were going door to door and talking face to face. There are limits in the modern world of everything's electronic.
I remember mimeographs.
Yeah. No, what were they?
Oh, yeah. I owned one.
No, I think we have a real challenge in front of us as a species, and I'll use whatever tools are available, but I definitely enjoy moments when I can see people light up with an idea and say, you know, that really makes sense to me.
Yeah. Okay, so do people listen to you now face-to-face? I mean, you did a lot of doorbelling and so on. Yeah, and now if someone, you know, again, I'm guilty. Like someone knocks on my door, I don't know, I'm going, oh, crap, you know, again.
Just wandering around Port Townsend, I don't have to knock on doors. We all come out of our houses into the co-op, into Safeway, into Goodwill, into whatever. The whole town is a public square, and I'm approached constantly. And, yes, people do listen.
I just finished gathering 1,000 signatures in favor of changing course on our nuclear war strategy. I got a lot of signatures at meetings, but the biggest place that I found them was the food co-op. And, yeah, there are some people that walk by. They don't want to see you. They don't want to think about anything but cornflakes. But there are other people that say, what, you're doing this? Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Why isn't more being done? Why aren't more people engaged?
Okay, right. This is us finishing up a special live edition of Compass. Thanks to Julia Cochran and Doug Milholland talking about activism. And I guess I'll kind of just say, hey, you know, stay active, speak up, speak your mind.
Care.
And thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Compass host Charlie Berman talking with Port Townsend political activists Julia Cochran and Doug Milholland. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. and repeats the following Saturday at noon. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ Live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, this is Compass executive producer Steve Evans. Thank you.